I just made a mistake in my intro, but that's not the biggest mistake I'll ever make. One of the biggest mistakes, actually, that Christian preachers commit while writing and delivering sermons, it's a mistake that happens when we base our sermon on a single verse or a short passage of the Bible without considering the context and without taking advantage of the education many of us possess. An education that can help us understand what the authors of the Bible may actually have been trying to say in a language not our own, to people living in a place not our own, in a time far removed from our own. Sometimes those of us who preach in this way make this mistake because we are lazy, and sometimes we make it because we believe the Bible is sort of magical. It's a book that you can open up at random and with your eyes closed, sort of put your finger on the page and read those words, and those words will have some kind of meaning just because they're in the Bible. I used to believe this, and I did this once when I was in high school. I was something of a mystic at the time, and I prayed, and I opened the Bible, and I put my finger down on the page, and I read something there about babies dying, and then I was convinced that the youngest of my two sisters was in mortal danger. And I prayed and I prayed that God would relent from this cruel plan to take her under the divine bosom. Well, more than 30 years later, my sister is fine. In fact, this weekend she's traveling in Kansas City where she's performing music from her new album, which means either that I am a fantastic prayer warrior or my theology at the time was a load of malarkey, and I'm going with the latter. Well, there's a verse from this morning's passage from 1 Corinthians that, in my experience anyway, gets misread and misunderstood a lot because too many people read it in isolation. It happens to be the 16th verse of the third chapter, which means that back in the day when I was pointing my finger at random words on the Bible, I also believed this verse was a little more special because John 3:16 is a special verse, and I had this hypothesis that all the most important verses in the Bible were 3:16s like this one. This is a verse which says, "Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells within you? And if anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy that person, for God's temple is holy and you are that temple." Well, I grew up hearing that verse out of context, and I came to believe, as indeed it had been suggested unto me, that the message contained in this verse is this: your body is God's temple. Therefore, you'd better not eat too many Jolly Ranchers. And you probably shouldn't kiss a girl who chews tobacco, because Jesus lives right there inside those lips of yours, and the Holy Spirit does not tolerate tooth decay and cannot abide the smell of Copenhagen dip. And since hard candy, tobacco products, and probably most girls are harmful to the body, if you're not careful, man, you are nothing but a sinner in the hands of an angry God. That's what I grew up believing anyway. Well, here's what I didn't know about this verse. I didn't know that the "you" in the verse, as in "you are God's temple," is referring to the community and not to a particular individual, least of all some child living in the redwood forest 2,000 years after the fact. It's a problem that standard English doesn't have a second person plural pronoun. We should probably adopt as standard English the y'all of the American South, or maybe the yins of Western Pennsylvania. It would save us a lot of unnecessary guilt, at least when we read this passage. The other thing I didn't know about this verse is that it is preceded by talk of laying a foundation and building a temple, which is significant because this passage was written at a time when the Christian church, which at the time was still a Jewish sect, the Christian church was trying to navigate its relationship with mainstream Judaism. And part of that negotiation had to do with figuring out what to believe about the Jewish temple, which prior to its destruction, roughly 15 years after these words were written, the Jewish temple was a place that both mainstream Jews and many Jewish Christians believed was the dwelling place of God. This is not to say that they believed God was incapable of being real and present outside of the temple. It's just that the temple was a place of special connection to God, a place where God's presence was perhaps more intense and more tangible. Well, Paul was among what probably was a minority at first, a minority of early Christian leaders, who didn't believe God dwelled exclusively or even particularly in the temple in Jerusalem. Paul believed that God dwelled in Christian communities wherever those communities gathered. And that made communities kind of like temples, which is why Paul speaks of laying a foundation and of building a temple as a metaphor for the work that he and Apollos and others did when they established the congregation in the Greek city of Corinth. They were starting a community that would be a dwelling place for God. It would be a temple. Now, please understand me when I say that I know God dwells in the hearts and in the minds and in the souls of individuals, and I do not doubt God is present in beautiful buildings. In fact, I have met God in people, and I have experienced God's presence in many an edifice. But Paul's suggestion in 1 Corinthians, which ultimately I like, Paul's suggestion is that God's primary residence is with people. When people gather together for prayer and worship and service, people become together God's holy temple. And in this passage, Paul is asking his readers to remember the ways God abides in faith communities. And he is urging us to exercise stewardship over our faith communities as we, in our communities, bear God's presence into the world. Now, let me tell you what I don't hear in this morning's passage from 1 Corinthians. I don't hear any mention about God's presence in a community of faith being something that has to be earned. There are plenty of Christian traditions that might suggest God's presence in a congregation is conditional, such that if you have the wrong theology, or the wrong music, or the wrong administration of the sacraments, then God is not present in that congregation, and therefore that congregation isn't a temple of the Holy Spirit. Heck, some congregations are places where people think God's presence is conditional on the color of the carpet. You've avoided this by not having a carpet. But I don't think that's what's going on here. I think this passage says that where people gather to be a congregation, a community of faith, God shows up. And that sounds like really good news, because it means that no one can tell us God isn't here in this place. And as you know, there are a lot of people who might like to tell us that God isn't present here at Montclair Presbyterian Church, because the fabric of our congregation is woven from threads that a lot of other Christian churches might reject. In fact, the first person I met from this community who wasn't part of the pastor nominating committee or the staff, she introduced me to herself by saying, "I'm a Jewish Buddhist lesbian senior citizen and I go to your church." Perfect. I take that as evidence that God is alive at Montclair Presbyterian Church. But I also know that in the broader church, a lot of people might not agree with what I take to be self-evident. And I also know that no one can tell me God doesn't abide in this congregation. Only God can make that decision. And I think that is really good news. But here's the challenge. On Thursday evening, I came home from work and I found, there's this wonderful thing that happens each month. Harper's Magazine shows up in my mailbox. And that happened on Thursday. The newest edition of Harper's Magazine was waiting for me. And before dinner, I read an article about a meeting of an organization called the World Congress of Families. It's an organization that the Southern Poverty Law Center lists as a hate group because of their radical and extremist opinions about LGBT equality and also their opinions about abortion. Today, Russia has some of the worst laws, the worst institutionalized homophobia in the world. And Poland has some of the most restrictive abortion laws in the world. And the World Congress on the Family is behind both sets of laws. And the article in Harper's Magazine was about a meeting that this group held last year in Tbilisi, Georgia. And the article spent a good bit of time writing about one particularly outspoken and, in my opinion, awful speaker at the event. He's an Orthodox priest from California by the name of Josiah Trenum. Well, it turns out I went to college with Josiah Trenum. Only back then he was an earnest evangelical surfer named Brad. But still, The same guy. Now he's the pastor of an Orthodox church in Riverside that I'm guessing is about as unlike our congregation as two churches could possibly be. Here's the question. Is it possible that God dwells in both congregations? Is it possible that the same divine spirit, so alive in this place, is also alive in a congregation willing to have as its pastor someone the Southern Poverty Law Center has listed as a purveyor of hate? Is that possible? Well, I think it is possible. And I also think it's possible for congregations to misrepresent the God who dwells in their midst. And I think a lot of churches are indeed misrepresenting the divine presence that abides among them. But God doesn't leave a place just because she is misrepresented. In fact, I went on to the website from Father Josiah Trenum's church to see what it looked like. And there on that website, I found an amazing and beautiful blog post written by the pastor's wife, who I also knew in college. And this blog post told the story of women from the community gathering around a friend as she died of cancer, praying for her, being with her as she received the sacrament of extreme unction. And I found that passage, that bit of writing, that blog spot, to be profoundly moving. I took it as evidence of the living spirit, of God alive in that place. It turns out that God is alive in all sorts of places. And our job is not to decide for God where God will live. Our job is faithfully to represent the God we meet in this community. This community that truly is God's holy temple. And we do this in all sorts of ways. But I have something of a project for us as we consider what it might look like for us to live as a community that with faithfulness reflects the God who dwells among us. I want us, as a congregation, to live as an intentional community of support for those still reeling from the shock of what is happening in America right now. Many among us are afraid. I am afraid. Many among us are grieving. I am grieving. Many among us are angry. I'm angry. Most of us, like me, need comfort. A lot of us, me included, want to do something. So let's be a faithful community that comforts and helps and supports and encourages the people of God. Let's be that faithful community, the temple of the Most High, where folks can come and find comfort and inspiration. Let's be a place that is safe, a place that provides strength for creative resistance. And if in the process you find yourself wanting to eat too much candy, that's between you and your dentist. As for kissing the person who chews tobacco, that's entirely up to you and the lucky nicotine addict. As a church, we're about something more deeply spiritual and important. Today happens to be the 75th anniversary of the day when Franklin Roosevelt issued an executive order which mandated the detention of Japanese Americans during the Second World War. I believe that that great crime against humanity committed by our country might not have happened if more churches had given faithful expression to the divine spirit residing in their midst. If they'd done more, if they'd said more, if they'd worked harder to be a reflection of the temple they were. Well, I believe we need to speak and we need to act in similar ways today because we live in similarly troubled times. Times that call us to be a faithful people. Times that call us to give expression to the Spirit of the Most High God who dwells among us. For we are God's temple. We are the dwelling place of the Holy Spirit. We are built on Christ the foundation. Let us live together into the days and weeks and months and years to come as a temple of God, a place of refuge
and strength.